Good morning. The Senate Education Committee meeting is now called to order. Today is Wednesday, February 16, 2022. The time is 9:03 a.m. We're meeting in the State Capitol Room, number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Hughes, Senator Stevens, Senator Begich, and myself as Chair, Senator Holland. I'm uncertain as to whether Senator Machicka will be able to join us today. Just a quick note, I'm going to unmask. We're following Senate guidelines in this committee, and you can unmask as long as you're at your station, and we'll mask up as we move around or whatever. Thank you to Mary Gwen, our recording secretary, and to Leah, our moderator for today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. The first item on today's agenda is the consideration of the governor's appointment to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. I welcome Principal Kim Berge to the presenter's table, and please state your name for the record and introduce yourself to the committee.
Good morning, Senator Holland. For the record, I'm Kimberly Berge, and I currently serve as the principal slash director for Ravenswood Homeschool. I know I've got to have it super
well, and a little bit tighter. Do you care to give us, we have your resume in front of us. Do you care to give us like a brief background on your educational history?
Certainly. I did just a short little bio, Senator Holland, so for everybody here, because I know not everybody knows me.
So please proceed.
So through the chair, as a lifelong Alaskan and the oldest of 10 children, I'm a product of our Alaska school system from first grade all the way through past my master's degree. As a highly qualified educator, I've served all across Alaska, and I've served children and families across Alaska since 1997 in a variety of educational settings, everything from public school, homeschool, adult education, and Head Start. Through the years, I've also had the honor to serve as the role of homeschool parent, private school parent, boarding school parent, teacher, assistant principal, principal, director, superintendent, Head Start administrator, and I've been a representative at both the state and the federal level for Head Start and Alaska Native children across our state. I've been a mentor to many. I have lived and worked in many communities across our state. And in addition to my day job, I currently serve on the Alaska Juvenile Justice Advisory Committee and the NATSU chapter of the Alaska Farm Bureau. We live on a small farm in Palmer with my husband and six children, and it's my pleasure to serve as the principal representative for professional teaching practices at this time.
Thank you, Principal Berge. Welcome, Senator Machicka, to the committee meeting today. Are there any questions from the committee for Principal Berge? Senator Begich.
First, Mr. Chairman, I didn't realize that that's what your face looked like. So this is a couple.
I apologize.
First question. I thank you for your years of service, especially in rural Alaska. I think that matters a lot. You worked in a number of school districts that I've had the pleasure of working with, and I'll be reaching out to those districts for you know, better, more full description of the work you've done. But one of the requirements is that that this position be submitted by a recognized Alaska Principals Association. I'm just wondering which of those associations has put your name forward. It's a requirement in the statute.
I'm a member of the Principals Association for our state.
Well, did they recommend that you be their choice? That's the requirement in the statute. So they have to make a recommendation.
I don't know who put the recommendation forward. That information was not shared with me.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Please do.
The Courtney Enright's online right now. Could I ask, she's our director of boards and commissions. We ask this question of every appointee. If there's a specific board, you know, a board with a specific position that is required, like for other teachers, it has to be from a professional teaching association for the same board. So if Courtney's online, Mr. Chairman, perhaps she could answer that question.
Yes, I believe we have Courtney Enright available, Director of Boards and Commissions, and probably on the phone. Director Enright, if you can hear me, please state your name and officially state your affiliation and your location. And if you've heard the question, please respond.
All right. Good morning. My name is Courtney Enright. I'm the Director of Boards and Commissions in the Office of the Governor. And through the chair, Senator Begich, my records reflect that Ms. Burgee was nominated by the Alaska Council of School Administrators.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That is a recognized Principals Association. And so note to file, in case you ever ask that question again. May I ask a second question?
Please proceed with no other questions that I see from the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The second question that that I ask of every member on this committee for this particular commission is, the nature of sanctions. This is your job on the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, is to potentially sanction teachers for violation of ethics codes. And so I'm wondering first if you're familiar with the Model Code of Ethics for educators, and are you prepared to make those decisions? So sort of two-part question: are you familiar with the Code of Ethics, and then whether you are or aren't, are you prepared to make decisions based on the Code of Ethics in terms of reprimanding or otherwise disciplining teachers?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, yes, I am very familiar with the Code of Ethics. That is something that I'm responsible for making sure that my staff understand as well as those myself. So, and as far as being able to be part of the group that makes that call as to whether or not sanctions need to take place, I am comfortable making that decision. I make decisions like that on a regular basis.
Thank you, Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for that answer.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Senator Hughes.
So thank you for being here. It's good to see someone from back home here in the building. So in your various roles as an educator, have you ever been involved with a teacher that needed to be sanctioned? So you mentioned that you are familiar, and just wondering if you've actually had actual experience where you've had a teacher that has violated the ethics code and had to deal with that as an administrator.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, yes, I have had that experience in the past.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. With no other questions from the committee, thank you, Principal Burgee, for joining us today. And is there any objection to forwarding Principal Burgee's name to the joint session? And seeing none, Senator Stevens, do you care to make a motion?
Brief at ease.
A brief at ease. Back on the record, Senator Stevens, do you care to make a motion?
Chairman, I move that Kim Burgee, appointee to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, be forwarded to a joint session of the legislature for consideration.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. I'll just note for the record that voting on this motion or signing the committee report does not reflect any intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of this individual during the joint session. Without objection, the motion passes. Once again, thank you, Principal Burgee, for joining us today. We'll do a brief at ease to sign some paperwork. Thank you so much. All right, the Senate Education Committee is back on the record. And at this time, I'll bring Senate Bill 174 before the committee. Senate Bill 174 is related to dress codes and natural hairstyles. This is the first hearing for Senate Bill 174 in the 32nd legislature. Senator Wilson, would you care to introduce your bill to us and also introduce any staff that you may need to help with your presentation?
Thank you today, Mr. Chair, and the Education Committee for hearing SB 174 to allow natural hairstyles. For the record, this is Senator David Wilson for Senate District D, and I'm joined by my staff, Jasmine Martin, who will help Carrie walk through the sectional and answer some of the technical questions of this piece of legislation, as long as our, some of our invited testifiers we have for the bill today. Committee, Senate Bill 174 prohibits school workplaces from enacting dress codes that restrict someone from wearing a natural hair. No employee or student should be prohibited participating in work or attending school because they're wearing their natural hair. Senate Bill 174 defines what standards are unacceptable for school districts to place on hair and employers. We have a few people at Teams that can probably give a little bit more personal testimony, as well as some of the testimony that you may have in your packets to help understand why this bill is needed and why it's so essential. And at this time, I will turn it over to Ms. Martin to go through the sectional and talk a little more about the bill.
Please place yourself on the record.
All right. For the record, Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson. I'll just dive right into the sectional. It's a two-section bill. So Section 1 adds a new section to AS 1403, and this is our education statutes. And this section disallows school districts from adopting school dress codes that prohibit students from wearing a natural hairstyle or a hairstyle that's commonly or historically associated with race or requires a student to permanently or semi-permanently alter their natural hair. This bill in the section does make an exception for when necessary to comply with health and safety laws or ordinances. Section 2 is identical to Section 1, except for it places the language into 2310, which is our labor statutes. And it relates to an employee-employer relationship and not a school-student relationship. And that concludes the sectional.
Thank you, Ms. Martin. Senator Wilson, is that, or are you finished with your introduction?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think we do have a couple of folks who are invited testifiers, or we can answer questions that the committee may have now. Or, but I think some of the invited testifiers may be the experts in this arena and field and would be more probably a little bit more appropriate to answer some of the more technical questions, of, especially upon hair and other issues.
That sounds excellent. What I'll do is at first I'll go to Rosalyn, and I'm not sure if it's going to be Witchy or Weich.
Weiss.
And Rosalind, let me pull it up one here and see exactly where they're located at. I believe Rosalind Weiss is probably listening on the phone. And Ms. Weiss, if you can hear me, please state your name, any affiliation, your location, and begin your invited testimony. Can you hear me?
It says she's on Teams. She's not.
Oh, she's not there.
Okay. We have Alyssa.
Well, we do have Alyssa. And once again, I'll attempt the name Quintine. Ms. Quintine, if you can hear me, please state your name, any affiliation, and your location, and begin your invited testimony. I don't see anything lighting up over there.
It still looks like she's on mute.
I'll just ask, I'm going to make one more request, Ms. Quintine, if you can take yourself off mute. And with no success there, we'll do a brief at ease. Senate Education Committee's back on the record. We're working on some technical difficulties. We may have a few questions from the committee for the sponsor of the bill while we try to resolve that. Senator Hughes.
Thank you, and thank you for bringing this bill forward. It's actually surprising in 2022 that we need a bill such as this. But I do have a question, because we're talking about schools here. The employer situation is different, because I imagine if someone came to work with and they were interacting with customers and their hair, they just rolled out of bed and their hair was all crazy, that might be kind of a problem for the employer. But I know high school kids do roll out of bed right before they come to school, and their hair may just be plain old messy, and that, you know, could be considered natural, right? So would this prohibit a school from requiring just neatness as far as that kind of thing, or an employer just requiring neatness? Because when we say permanently or semi-permanently, someone could argue that semi-permanently, the natural state is messy, and semi-permanently might just be combing, brushing and combing the hair. So is there anything that would inhibit the ability for employer or school, particularly schools, since this is the education committee, for required neat appearance, including clothing and hair?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, this, for the record, this is Senator David Wilson. We're not trying to get into that way of sort of neatness or items. This is more on what we consider more culturally appropriate styles of hair, locks, braids, twists, afros, anything that can be considered culturally relevant. And so that's what we're trying to do, and this is what we feel is the best way to address some of these issues that have been plaguing within our nation and here within Alaska as well.
So, follow up?
I'll just let you know, we do have the invited testimony, and I, Senator Wilson will have his Ms. Jasmine, Ms. Martin, back to help with some of these questions if necessary. But follow up.
Yes, so this is more of the policy intent of the bill's sponsor. So it sounds like, just getting on the record, that there's nothing here that would prevent a requirement for general neatness, from what I can tell, Mr. Chair. And the other question I have, and if you have to defer this to Jasmine or one of the others, is in the sponsor tape statement, you use the phrase protective style, and I guess a natural or protective style, I guess I don't know what a protective hairstyle is, and just for education purposes, if we could find out what that means.
Yes, and we do have some definitions that we can go through, and I think that's going to go into another question that we have, I think, that we got submitted from another committeeman, but she has my definitions.
And just as a funny follow-up, the reason why it kind of jumped out at me is there was a time I was wearing my hair a certain way, and my son said it looked like a helmet. So that was my protective hair, but I'm sure that's not what it means, Mr. Chair. So
no, and
thank you, Senator Hughes. With what we'll do is now we'll move on to invited testimony. I see looks like Ms. Alyssa Quintine is joining us via Teams. And if you would care to state your name, any affiliation, and your location, that's the thing they're requiring nowadays for people joining in is to state their location, and then begin your invited testimony.
Hi, well, good morning, everyone. Sorry for the audio issues. My name is Alyssa Quinton. I'm an organizer and creative here in Fairbanks, Alaska. And I've been here for 20 years, live, work, and play here in Fairbanks. And I am, I'm happy to be here and be able to talk to you all about this. To be 100% honest with you all, I'm a little bittersweetly happy to testify, because I honestly didn't think that this was something that our legislators cared enough about. And the reason why I say that is because many Black people in Alaska, we suffer in silence because we don't have anyone besides ourselves and our close ones to go to about this. So I'm really grateful for Senator Wilson introducing this. Discrimination in general and hair discrimination is just a part of being Black in Alaska. Every single person that I know who's Black has been harassed, been touched, been sent home from school, have the talk about their hair at work and school at some point in their life. And for me, I always try to leave some room, because you know that there's always somebody that's got it worse than you. And I think that I feel that everything that could have happened to you about your hair, I've had happen to me. All through elementary to high school, so Artisbly to West Valley, I've had classmates, teachers, and administrators do something to be in my hair. Kids and teachers would touch my hair without permission, all sorts of inappropriate comments and questions. I've been banned from certain chemistry labs and home ec classes because of my hair. I have been barred from participating in swimming because of problems with my hair. Never really knew what those were. I was often put on the spot and asked to defend or being asked questions about why Black people's hair is bushy and smelly and dirty as a kid from various teachers. I've been yanked by my hair and thrown down the stairs. I've had my hair cut and burned in the classrooms before. I've been tied to bus poles by my braids. And of course, my parents and the appropriate folks were involved when those things happened, but nothing happened at a district level to really ensure that something was being done to address the ignorance and the bigotry that these teachers and administrators apparently had for Black kids and their misunderstandings about our hair. Nothing was really done for my mom and I for the decades of harm that we went through. And it really came down to, you know, us threatening with legal action for the district to do something. And all they would really do was talk to the teacher, which that then resulted in the teacher being mad at me for a year or however long they were there. And in work, you know, it's really not, unfortunately, any better. I think it's easier for me to say that the only place I haven't experienced some form of hair discrimination is the place that I work now, and it's with an organization. And I've worked in customer service, I've worked in university departments, I've worked in training facilities and various organizations. So it's really just a common experience. You know, I've had the touching, I've had the comments, I've had HR departments write policies targeting my hairstyles. I've been given ultimatums of come to work with your hair straightened or don't come at all. And there's really not much you can do in that situation, especially if you need to have a paycheck. And, you know, throughout my life here in Fairbanks, I tried to address this problem in the community to no avail. You know, there's still record of me being a, you know, frustrated 13-year-old begging the school district to change their dress code because it was discriminatory, you know. And I recently just turned off the district's diversity committee after 3 years, and same thing, educated them and the school board about bonnets and do-rags, you know, had the whole gang-affiliated conversation with them and told them that that rhetoric and that language has to stop, has nothing to do with our hair and our hairstyles, and it's nothing but a racial microaggression rooted in fear that targets Black and brown students. I gave them resources and suggestions to make dress codes more responsible and aware to students' financial access and cultures and identities. And I don't really know if the district took any of those suggestions, but what I can say is that our district is constantly under fire for its neglect and its bigotry towards the student. You know, I think as a kid and as a young adult, it's easy for people to dismiss and belittle hair discrimination, because if that's not your everyday, if you don't live every day, every time you go to work, every time you go to the store experiencing these things, it's not going to seem like a problem. It's, you know, they tell us, oh, just stand up for yourself, just go tell a teacher, just go tell HR. But when it is those authority figures and spaces that are hurting you, when it's random strangers that are coming up to you and yanking your twist to see if it's real, when your city council won't take it on because it's a lower 48 problem and it doesn't happen in Alaska, when the borough assembly throws up their hands, they say we're second class, there's nothing we can do, when the school board is the source of the trauma and the pain because they don't want to do anything about it, and there's nothing happening in the legislature or Congress, even after you've told people about what's happening, when you've had to fight your local Walmarts and your Safeways to stop locking up the hair products that you need to take care of your hair, when there's barely any hair salons or no hair salons here in Fairbanks that can do your hair, you know, because professional hair techs weren't taught to do our hair because it's too nappy, too hard, it's unmanageable. And when there's no one in your community besides you and your Black friends and your mom that understands and knows and goes through exactly what you're going through, then what is a Black kid to do? So I say all of this to say that I'm exhausted and that I had given up and that I had tried all that I could throughout my life to solve this problem. I wasn't seeing any of my leaders at a municipal level and even at a communal level try to address this. So I focused on keeping myself healthy. But this bill, though, gives me a little bit of hope. It lets me know that the two Black elected leaders that we have in this legislature, they know. And they hear us, and they want to do something about this because it is damaging, and it does impact every single aspect of our life. It gives me hope that this is going to create a much-needed conversation about discrimination and microaggression and lateral violence and how our legislators need to step up and address it and not wait for our elected or people from communities marginalized to take this work on, but it's everybody's. And most importantly, it gives me hope that maybe the pain that I and so many other people in the state have experienced can be prevented for another tiny little Black girl with cute little twists and beads, but you know, in her hair, and she can swing and jingle and be, you know, happy and merry and feel good, that she can take up space, as much space as she needs, that she's celebrated and respected and welcomed, so that when she gets to my age, she's grown up with love and not out of survival. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Quinton. And what I'll do is right now we have Rosalind Weish on the phone, I believe. And Rosalind Weish, if you can hear me, please state your name and your any affiliation and your location. And then begin your invited testimony.
Okay. Hi, my name is Rosalind White. I have been in Alaska since the 70s, and I graduated from high school and hair school in 1982. So I've been in the industry for a very long time, and I'm a Black young lady that do hair, teach hair, and have five children that have had different situations with their hair. So when my daughters would go to school with their hair braided, their fellow classmates would want to touch their hair and redo their hair while they were at school. And I felt like a teacher should have been like, I don't think her mom would want you to do that, because once you take the braids out, then she's got this poof going on, and then it's not a happy camper for the rest of the day at school. And so then they want to know, why is your hair so curly? You know, it looks like a Brillo pad. And she would just be so embarrassed and crying, and I would literally have to go get her. And I'm upset because that wasn't something that should have happened at school anyway. A lot of times as a Black student that gets up late and is running to school, my daughter wore a pink bandana to school with her outfit because she had on a pink shirt. And I had to go and pick up my daughter because they said their pink bandana represented a gang. As I'm sitting in the meeting, you all will not believe, three young men walked by in cowboy hats and long trench coats, and I literally looked at the counselor and said, you've got to be kidding me, because my daughter was having a bad hair day. She can't wear a pink bandana, but these young men can wear cowboy hats and a long trench coat, and it just shocked me. And he said, well, I'm so sorry. I understand what you're feeling right now, but I don't make the rules. I said, okay. I could understand if she was wearing a red bandana or a Black bandana or a blue bandana, but pink, I mean, it was just a bad hair day. At the same time, my son had long hair, and if I braided their hair to go to school, it was considered inappropriate or not a professional or a student, like a good-looking thing for a student. And then you would have the little white boys or Mexican boys or whatever with the long hair, and nothing was ever said about that. It was kind of strange, you know, because it seemed like it was picked out as a specific, well, you can't wear braids, you can't wear cornrows, and you can't wear dreads. But here you have someone else with a mullet going on, a young man with a mullet, or a young man with a perm, and none of that was ever addressed. It's amazing in the professional world how, as a black young lady, you can be told that your afro or your dreads or your braids is not a professional look, but yet this is cultural. This is cultural for us. And our forefathers and stuff wore their hair the way we do. I'm a professional hair instructor in Anchorage. And the awesome thing that I love about Ahead of Time Design Academy is we teach all hair. And when our students graduate, they don't have to be afraid to do any nationality's hair. They can do it all. So I'm just so happy that someone told me this bill was on, I'm so sorry, that someone told me this bill was on the floor, because my children and my clients' children and my clients as a whole have been put into a box concerning their hair. And it's sad because as a student or a child, you're putting something inside of them at such an early age to be so concerned about their hair and their hairstyles in a negative way. When they left home, they thought they looked great. And so I'm just really, really happy that the bill is on the floor. Of course, because I'm talking now, I'm coughing, you know, but I'm just really able to answer any question that any of the legislators or fellow people there that might want to ask me anything. This is my last thing. If you remember a long time ago when the Venus and Serena Williams were playing tennis, they would literally stop the matches because of the beads that they wore in their hair. And it's just amazing how in sports, in life, in the professional world, we have been criticized so severely about the hairstyles that we have chosen to wear. And like I said, even though it's all cultural and this is our culture, it's like it's almost like a society trying to take away every bit of culture that you have.
Thank you, Rosalyn. I'll pose a quick question to Alyssa. If you just can you share, at any level of schooling, had you ever felt that you received support, like you saw that there was a supporting guideline for cultural hairstyles?
Never, unfortunately. Not until I was an adult did I start seeing, not support, but a lot of the outright, you can't wear your braids or you can't wear dreadlocks, just being removed from the dress code. But there's nothing that said, hey, this is how our hair naturally grows out of our head, kinky and coily. Dreads and braids and twists and patch locks and perspective styles, which includes all of those, and extensions and wigs, is a part of not just black culture, but how we keep our hair neat and how we keep our hair healthy. Like, it's part of our hygiene. So hands off. Don't talk to them about it. It's like, let them mind their business. They're taking care of themselves. So I feel that our district, in particular in Fairbanks, can do much, much more.
Thank you for that answer. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you both for both Alyssa and Rosalyn for testifying. The thing that I've really struck me about your testimony was the double standard that's out there. And that, to me, is the clear sign when there's a discriminatory discriminatory practice in place, you know, and you know, as a Caucasian who wears my hair long and who has worn beads in my hair and has worn my hair braided and out and otherwise, I've never once in school was asked to change it. In high school, where I wore my hair long and, in fact, did wear beads in my hair, I was never asked to do that. But actually, there were African-American folks that were asked to wear their hair differently. And so hearing you say it, hearing your life experience about it makes a huge difference to me because of the clear double standard that you've both experienced, Rosalind, with your children, and you, Alyssa, in your own experience. So I just want to thank you both for that and let you know that at least this person is and the others here are listening to you and hearing what you're saying. So appreciate the bill coming before us.
Are there any other questions from the committee? Senator Hughes.
Yes, and I too want to thank you, Rosalind and Alyssa, for sharing your experience and perspective. It's pretty eye-opening. And I'm not sure if you can answer this or this would be from the bill sponsor. And I'm wondering specifically about not only the Fairbanks School District policy and as far as other district policies, are there actually policies in place right now in school districts that prevent afros and braids and dreadlocks, et cetera? Or is this more just kind of a discrimination where it's not based on policy? So I'm wondering, do we have specific policy in Fairbanks and other school districts that if this were to pass, they'd have to fix their policy?
Well, I definitely know, this is Rosalind speaking now. I definitely know in some of the private schools there was actual policy written down, because my children did attend ACS and they did attend Abbott Luke Christian School when they were young, and that's when that happened. As they got older, they kept their hair short, and the only other thing in the school district that we had a problem with as far as actual law was the pink bandana or the yellow bandana, or she couldn't wear no color bandana. And those were definitely not gang related bandanas. It was just because she didn't feel like doing her hair that day and she didn't want everybody to see her hair looking a mess.
Thank you. Thank you, Rosalind. Senator Hughes.
Can the sponsor follow up with that? Or, oh, maybe Alyssa had something to say.
Alyssa, did you have some input on this?
I can speak a little bit to Fairbanks. In the past, that has been on the books in the District ARs, and I think as I went through high school, they took those ARs out. Where that sort of sneaks in is in the dress code, so in the student handbook that they give students every year, is typically where I remember seeing it and hear other students seeing it. I don't know if that is currently on the books for any high schools, but you know, either way, it's discrimination with and without policy, because that doesn't stop a hall monitor or administrator coming to you and saying, hey, you can't wear this, hey, you can't have your hair like that, hey, that's discriminatory, you know, that's gang related, you know, you can't wear a bandana, this, that, the third. Even if the school has a policy or not, it doesn't stop a teacher from kicking you out of their class if they have a problem with the wear that, you know, with what you're wearing, with how you're wearing your hair, sorry. So yeah, I think having something on the books that says, regardless of what you have in your policy, you are not going to do this to students, I think is the better way to do it, because then it gives some sort of precedent to districts and to workplaces as well, letting them know what those boundaries are and how it is extremely damaging to their students and their employees.
And Mr. Chair, can the sponsor follow up to if there are any policies in districts across the state that would have to change? And then it actually raised the other question, does this bill apply to private schools?
So, Jasmine Martin, for the record, through the chair, I do not have a list of policies that would have to change. What I will say is some of these policies are far more subtle than you can't have cornrows or something like that. They might say you may only have one braid or your hair must be a professional hairstyle. And that leaves the discretion up to a certain person to say whether or not a hairstyle is professional. And that's where a lot of problems rise with this, is where things are left up to discretion like that. And then secondly, I don't believe it would apply to public schools, or sorry, private schools, because they're not under the school board and the rules set by the school board.
And I'll just state that I know every legislator loves to hear, I'd rather see this as two bills, one that addresses the school and one that addresses employers, because I think a school is a much smaller bubble. Students are very trendy. You know what the hairstyles are that you're going to see. I think it's really easy for a student to go to the principal and make the argument that this is my hairstyle. I could imagine across the state employers, it would be a real challenge for someone to come in and I can't say that I know every hairstyle that every culture may present in Alaska. And is there going to be a guideline that we're going to say, you know, this is an accepted cultural hairstyle and this one is not? So I have a few concerns about getting beyond the smaller bubble of the school and looking at the state and trying to enforce this across employers, across all states. Did you have a comment? Okay. Senator Stevens.
Senator, understand the exceptions, and I don't know what they might be. It says safety, for example, health. What may be like in a shop class if the shop teacher were concerned about, you know, getting your hair cut on the machinery or something like that. And that sort of goes back to your comment about discretion. Whatever those exceptions are, it does still leave it up to the discretion of the shop teacher. So if you just help me understand, what are those exceptions?
Correct. For the record, this is Senator David Wilson. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, this is something like health code standards. You know, when you're working in a cafeteria or food safety, you got to wear a hairnet. So your hair must be conforming to that style. And so we don't want to bypass any ordinances or laws or regulations that a municipality or other government agencies may have in place. And so those are the exceptions that we did not list them all. We just left that broad in terms of regulations or other safety items within the statute. So we didn't want to be too prescriptive of that, but leave it to where, obviously, if you are in a shop class welding, you know, we don't want to cause an unsafe situation for anybody to be put in. I mean, I think we can all, well, yes, this committee may remember the wonderful Pepsi commercial of the Super Bowl ad of Michael Jackson, and we don't want to create a situation like that in a shop class.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Senator Begich.
Just a couple of questions. I noted just in my staff's review of the bill, there were 14 other states that have passed similar legislation in particular, but yours stops at tight coils, and you've mentioned afros, cornrows were mentioned, head wraps have been mentioned. Colorado's law included, I'm looking at the Colorado law right now, it includes locks, twists, same language as your bill, and then tight coils or curls, cornrows, bantu knots, afros, and head wraps. Those are not included in yours. And I'm just, first question, a simple one as to why. And I just would note also, Mr. Chairman and other members for the record, military made the same move back in 2014 where they prohibited they eliminated the prohibition on these hairstyles. So I just would note that former Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel did that back in 2014. So this is actually it has precedence even in the U.S. military. But could you answer that question though about why you didn't include? And given, especially since in testimony we've heard cornrows, afros, and head wraps discussed.
Jasmine Martin, for the record, through the chair to Senator Begich, and just for the rest of the committee, what he's referring to is on page 1, lines 8 through 10, and page 2, lines 6 through 8, I think. And so it's important to note that in our drafting manual, includes does not mean limited to. Includes means includes and, or it's not a limiting term. And so we have specifically included locks, twists, tight coils as sort of examples, but it's certainly not limited to that. So any natural hairstyle and anything that falls under there would be counted as a natural hairstyle.
And then just a follow-up.
Follow-up?
To a second question. You'd mentioned 1403-135, which is, as the chairman mentioned, is the education code. That's public education, not private education. So this, just want to be clear, this wouldn't apply to a private school. It would apply to our public school district, since that's the code where you're writing the law. Is that right?
For the record, through the chair, that's correct.
All right. Thank you, Senator Begich. Are there any other questions from the committee regarding this? Senator Wilson, I'll give you an opportunity. Do you have any closing comments on it before we set this aside for the day?
Yeah, we just want to thank the committee for the opportunity to hear this bill. As you heard from the testifiers, this is something that goes on from pre-K all the way up to adulthood. In our next committee referral, if it passes out of this committee, we'll address the workplaces, where I can tell you I know several employers in this state that have very discriminatory hairstyle dress codes. I used to work for one. And so this is something that is a lifelong situation that most people just have to suffer in silence. And we just want that suffering to end in the state of Alaska. So thank you again for hearing this, Senate Bill 174.
Thank you, Senator Martin. Pardon me. Thank you, Senator Wilson. Thank you, Ms. Martin. Thank you to the Rosalind and Alyssa, the two invited testimony we had today. So please submit amendments to my office on Senate Bill 174 by Tuesday, February 22nd. And at this time, I will set Senate Bill 174 aside. All right. All right. So at this time, the next item on today's agenda is Senate Bill 34 relating to tribal compact schools. Senate Bill 34 is back before the committee. This is the fourth hearing on Senate Bill 34 in the 32nd legislature. My intent today is to adopt a committee substitute and address any member questions on the committee substitute. We have a stakeholder tuning in, one or two stakeholders tuning in by Teams today, but we will be bringing this back before the committee next week and have the stakeholder groups to ensure this committee substitute fulfills our goals and have public testimony on the committee substitute. Let's see. I will entertain a motion on the bill next week unless additional issues arise. Senator Stevens, do you care to make a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move work order LS-0309-B be placed before the committee as our working document for Senate Bill 34.
I will object for discussion, and we have Mr. Lampkin at the presenter's table. Mr. Lampkin, do you care to walk us through the proposed committee substitute?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. If I may, please take a moment and this opportunity to acknowledge that we are on Tlingit land and to honor the indigenous people of this land. I'm grateful to be part of this community, to honor the culture, the traditions, and resilience of the Tlingit people. Before you, Mr. Chairman and committee, is a document that's the result of some collaboration with Ms. Kitka and the Alaska Federation of Natives team. In working with them, there was a conversations that kind of boiled this idea down to six things. First, that the commissioner and the department establish what's been a demonstration project, or could be translated into a pilot program that would be sunset. Secondly, that the commissioner would use that demonstration project to enter into compacts for or with tribes and tribal organizations to operate schools. Thirdly, that those schools would observe non-discrimination laws, have the means to limit admissions, to establish preferential enrollments and preferential employment. Fourth, that this demonstration project would include annual reporting to include things such as the number of schools participating in compacts, the enrollments, attendance, student performance through assessments, and recommendations for changing the compact. Fifth, that this be these compact schools be treated as a school district. That's a key term that we'll be talking some more about for purposes of calculating their school funding, things Title 1417, basically daily membership, area cost differential, that's that manner of thing. And then finally, to hold any federal funding, that state, tribal, federal money is harmless as we move forward. So taking those six things and holding them up to the existing bill, we, and working with legal, carefully rendered the CS before you. It's intended to streamline the project, to simplify it. It's, as you're going to find, is silent on a number of statutes that many other school districts in the states have to follow and observe. It's intended to be flexible, maximize autonomy, with maintaining some measure of accountability. This is certainly not a finished product by any means. It's an obligation that I had made was to bring a working document to the table, and that's what we've done. So with that, I will dive into the summary of changes itself. And again, I want to mention the reference to the use of the word school district is what triggers a lot of these things and definitions as to throughout statute. The overall summary, again, is to simplify this. Attempts to be less prescriptive, to set up a pilot program, demonstration project with general authority for the state, that is to say the commissioner, and tribes to negotiate individualized, culturally responsive compacts, to periodically review those compacts and possibly sunset them over time. So sections one and two, because of the sunset, you'll see that it creates the compacts and then sunsets them in 2028. And please stop me at any time if you want to discuss any of these. Section.
Any questions? Or do we already have questions?
Oh, yeah.
This is Senator Begich.
Thank you. You're bringing up the sunset clause right away, so I'm going to dive right in and just say, is that enough time for a demonstration program? We had a debate in education, in finance committee yesterday about the amount of time it takes to actually show change or show movement. Is 2028, that's how many years from now? It's just, 6 years from now. Is that enough time?
Good, sure, Senator Begich. That's a good question. I'm sure as many are going to be coming. Other questions? That specifically 5 years was what was requested by Ms. Kicka and her team. And they are standing by online to help back me up here and chime in as well.
Follow up on that, if I may.
Follow up.
I think I do want to hear from Ms. Kicka on that, given that the discussion was quite robust and finance committees eventually where this bill will go. And their concern, in particular Senator Hoffman's concern, was how we show progress, how we measure progress for any reform or efforts that we do. And Senator Hoffman was clear about the time, about the amount of time that was going to be necessary, and that was dealing with the Reeds Act or the education bill, the Senate 111. But so 211. 111. But so just getting right to point, I guess Ms. President Kicka, is that enough time?
At this point, a brief at ease. Education committee's back on the record. I apologize for that interruption. Senator Stevens.
I just want to point out that the plan is, and I think it was very wise, recommendation of Ms. Kitka was to do a pilot program, and the goal is to eventually expand it more than just a pilot program. So, I'd hesitate to make it too long, because then it'd be forever before you actually get to a wide-ranging program that affects more people. So that's my only response, is that this is just a pilot demonstration project, and I think it's reasonable to have a limited time to accomplish that before you go on to other districts.
Mr. Chairman.
And I was going to give Ms. Kitka a chance to address this, but if Senator Begich.
It's just we gave early education 12 years, as a pilot program, and we still haven't adopted it. So I would just say, you know, I really want to know what the criteria is, but if we want to wait until after the section was done, Mr. Chairman, and then maybe come to questions, that might be a better.
And we've already addressed this question, and we've kind of drawn Ms. Kitka into the conversation on this one issue. When I went to a brief at ease, it was only to remind the committee that what we'll probably do after this question is go ahead and plow into the summary of changes and determine that this is going to be the new working document for the committee. But at this point, I'd like to invite Ms. Kitka, if you had any comments on the 5-year sunset on the program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope everyone on. To keep it short, we support it being a 5-year demonstration because we are not trying to turn education upside down. We're wanting the legislature to give us a chance to prove this out. We certainly would be amenable to a small technical thing that extends it for 5 years with an option to extend another 5 years if that addresses Senator Begich's concern. But we really want to prove out this concept so that we build great support behind it. So we don't feel that we need more than 5 years at this time, but we have no objections to having an optional additional 5 years.
Ms. Kitka, would you put yourself on the record after the fact a little bit, just real quick? Put yourself on the record, your location, and your affiliation.
Julie Kitka, I'm honored serving as the president of the Alaska Federation of Natives based in Anchorage.
Thank you so much. All right, at this point, I'll return to Mr. Lampkin, and if you want to continue with the summary of changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. So, these are all littered. I just covered A. B is in regard to the CS on Section 3, page 2, line 15. It was requested, and it was, as we discussed at a prior hearing, that we add that the commissioner can enter compacts with federally recognized tribes or tribal organizations. And it was explained that there could be instances where we have a consortium or a regional nonprofit native company organization that may in and of itself not be a recognized tribe, but that tribe could empower that organization to act on its behalf and enter into these compacts. Again, in the spirit of simplifying the bill and kind of reining it in a bit, it deletes from the original bill a detailed process of initiating a compact, for example, that a native tribal council or a tribal organization would have to pass a resolution and formally submit that to the commissioner and that manner of things. Just to simplify that, those types of processes could be done through regulation. D is that similarly to maximize flexibility, that the compacts may have provisions relating to compliance and rules and dispute resolutions, record keeping, and so forth, rather than shall. Those are common items that are contained in contracts. E deletes from the original bill a series of references to miscellaneous provisions and statute that school districts around the state have to comply with. A variety of them, I don't necessarily need to name them all there. I spelled them out pretty thoroughly. Now the CS is silent on all of those components. They were struck from the original bill. This includes things like surveys, access to student records, the performance scholarship program, a number of things there. F is in regard to nepotism, I suppose, to be honest. It's in regard to when a superintendent it bars them from hiring someone of their immediate family unless approved by a school board. In this instance, we added written approval of the commissioner. G, again, struck from the original bill because it was silent. Those six things that were talked about with Ms. Kitka and AFN was silent on these things. And so, again, to strip the bill down, simplify it, struck things relating to teacher employment, retirement, sick leave, tenure, sabbaticals, collective bargaining. doesn't necessarily mean that they such terms cannot or will not be negotiated with the commissioner, but at this time it's silent on those things in the bill. Similarly, in H there, deleted from the original bill, struck relating requirements relating to students and educational programs, services for students with disabilities, health education standards, bilingual bicultural programs. And again, that doesn't necessarily mean that they will not or cannot be negotiated in the compact. I adds the component that any federal monies that are coming in presently, state, federal, tribal monies that are coming in and moving around are held harmless by this program. J relates to, again, because we're striking reference to retirements and leave and so forth, concern being to creating loopholes, we struck reference that the compact school are state employees. K on page 3 is for a conforming amendment, really. It relates to employment and that the compacts can provide employment preferences to members of tribes or the tribal organizations. L is a new section, subsections 14.16.350, that speaks to the reporting that was discussed earlier, that is appropriate and reasonable to have a reporting component to these compacts. Section 4 and 5 relate to the effective date that that they're eligible to receive funds appropriations from the public education fund through the funding formula, and that 5 then repeals that at the sunset date. And similarly is a conforming amendment largely that in the event, as with any school district, if their appropriation is underfunded, if the fund is not enough to provide all the basic need to schools, that amount be prorated proportionately, and it repeals that at the sunset. Again, with section letter O, sections 10 and 11 regarding school age, compulsory attendance, that it exempts compacts from having to address that and sunsets that in 2028. P is, again, conforming relating to the definition of school district. Generally, throughout statutes, throughout Title 14 and others, that it includes state tribal education compact schools as being a, quote, school district. Q deleted requirement because it was touched upon earlier. There's a statute there that relating to special ed and services to children with disabilities strikes that from the original bill. R strikes from the original bill for purposes of a school district and the definition of a school district as it relates to education tax credit program, arbitration, collective bargaining, contribution to PERS, there's a corporate income tax credit for educational investment, and then a reimbursement to school districts that provide medical services to certain students with disabilities. All of those things were struck and are now silent in the CS. And then finally, S there is establishing that the entire program be repealed in 2028. And to clarify for everyone's understanding, the way those work is that, as with a number of programs, when we sunset a board of X, Y, or Z, that's sort of like a audit type process that we review the program, whatever that program may be. In this case, it would likely be in the year 2027, and that we would just have a bill likely to then change that 2028 to, say, 2035. Every rotation, we perpetually extend that sunset further out into the date until someday perhaps we would repeal that sunset entirely.
Thank you, Mr. Lampkin. Now, we do have President Kitka on board. Oh. Senator Stevens?
Can I make a comment before we go further? I need to remind people how we got here and why we are here at this point and what we are trying to do here. This was a result of Commissioner Johnson calling Alaska Education Challenge group together 2 years ago and came up with some recommendations on where public education should be going in Alaska. One of the recommendations was this issue of tribal compacting. And as we progressed on it, it's a very complex issue, and I appreciate Mr. Lampkin's work on this. It's very, very complex, what are going to include and not include. But as we were working on this, Ms. Kitka from AFN recommended we go to a pilot program, and so I just wanted everyone to have an idea of how we got to where we are right now, and I appreciate your going next to Ms. Kitka.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. As I mentioned, we have President Kitka on board, and I'd just like to see, as invited testimony, if she has any comments on, there's a lot of sweeping changes in this committee substitute. Has she had a chance to have discussions or review it, and does she believe the committee substitute would satisfy the goals of her goals as a interested stakeholder? President Kitka, please put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. For the record, my name is Julie Kitka. I serve as the president of the Alaska Federation of Natives based in Anchorage. I want to thank the committee and the sponsor, Senator Stevens. We support the committee substitute that Senator Stevens is bringing forward. We probably would have a few minor technical things that we would want to share with him. And they fall within one category is we have two purposes for this. One, we're so grateful for the opportunity to test out compacting in education. And so we fully support utilizing the mechanism of compacting as a way to get greater efficiencies in resources. But the primary purpose is the transformative change in innovation. We need to incentivize innovation to benefit our students. And that's where we found that we were 100% in alignment with Commissioner Johnson, that we've got to keep the interests of our children first and foremost. And as we're coming through this pandemic and coming out of it on that, we think it's an opportune time to push forward on this transformation and make better and better what we're doing. And like I said, I appreciate Senator Begich's wanting to stretch out the time on that. We agree, certainly it's going to take time on that, but we don't need to take on everything. We just need for you to grant the commissioner permission to engage in these negotiations and compacting. We also hope to engage the federal government in we have a hearing coming up on the 24th of this month in which the Senate Indian Affairs Committee is holding a field hearing. There's a number of things that we want them to change on the federal side, which will have implications on this too. So, for example, they have had prohibitions against federal resources coming in for school facilities. That is not correct. They should be. Let that grow, allow resources to flow in to help for our village schools and other things. So we're kind of looking at this as we need you guys' permission to have the commissioner open up these negotiations on a demonstration process, which is much flexibility as you can. We need the federal government to step in with their responsibility and allow them to help support on the innovation, whether or not it's in supporting indigenous incorporation of indigenous knowledge into curriculum, whether or not further teacher training, whether or not dealing with the facility funding things and open that door on that. So we really do think this is going to be evolve into kind of a hybrid where we don't let the federal government off the hook, but we keep your committee and this legislature in the leadership role of saying, let's embark on this thing. Let's test it out. Let's work. And where it proves out, we extend it. Where it doesn't prove out, we modify it. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, President Kitka. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And President Kitka, I wasn't saying extend it for 10 years. I was saying, is that something you need? I was asking the question. I believe that we knew with early education within 5 years that it worked and had hoped that that demonstration project wouldn't go on longer. The question is 5 years enough time? And you've answered that question that it is. I didn't have a preference for extending the time. My preference was for ensuring that you felt that there was enough time with the 5 years to be able to accomplish what you'd hoped to accomplish. So I just wanted to clear that up for the record.
Thank you, Senator Begich. At this, and I, okay, Senator Hughes.
Just a very quick question, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Julie, for being with us today. The demonstration project, is it going to be one school, or could it possibly be multiple? Because that's one of the things you want to get through that period, that pilot program, so you can expand it around the state. So just wondering, are we talking just one location? Is that what you have in mind?
President Kitka?
Mr. Chairman, no, it would be multiple ones. We have interest from different parts of the state, and it could be a small community. It could be a regional approach. It could be. So I think we would have a little bit of diversity on the pilot on that and different approaches. So that would be our hope. And we're using the model of how the Bureau of Indian Affairs did when they did the demonstration on compacting of BIA fundings. They opened up 10 demonstration projects that first year. And then the next year, they opened up another 10 years. So what the magic amount is, I don't know. That would be up to the commissioner and the State Board of Education on how far to go, but it would be multiple sites.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Thank you, President Kitka. At this point, I will remove my objection to adopting Work Order Lima Sierra 0309/B as our working document for SB 34. Is there any further objection? With no further objection, Work Order Lima Sierra 0309/B is our working document. And do members have any other questions on the committee substitute? Senator Begich.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my question is, what is your goal for this? Because I actually have a number of questions. My staff and I spent a lot of time yesterday going through the committee substitute, meeting with Senator Stevens' staff. And quite frankly, Ms. Tobin was up quite late at night working on this. And so I have a number of questions, and we only have a few minutes left. So is it your intent that we take those questions next week, or would you like
yes,
to start now?
Senator Begich, we will have this bill back before us next Wednesday. And I was prepared to set an amendment deadline for Tuesday next week, but at this point, I will just hold off on that, and we'll have this back before us again Wednesday of next week. So with no other questions from the committee, at this point, I will set Senate Bill 34 aside. All right. So Senate Bill 112 regarding student transportation was on the agenda, but it will not be heard today. We're going to push that back. Is there any other business before the committee? Seeing none, our next meeting will be Wednesday, February 23rd at 9 a.m., and we are adjourned at 10:18.